Hello, everybody. It's Otelli Edwards here. Welcome to another episode of Deep Dive. And I'm sure you have noticed by now that there is somebody missing, and that's my co-host, Steve Chia. Well, he is overseas this week, so I am going to be flying solo. Speaking of flying, I'm sure you've all heard the news by now, and that's the impending closure of Jetstar Asia. It was big news when it hit all of us in the morning. I remember it was a weekday morning, where the Singapore-based airline announced that it will cease operations as of 31st of July. So they've cited high costs as well as increasing competition, and Jetstar's exit has in fact caused quite a bit of stir among travelers as well as aviation experts. So how is this going to affect other low-cost carriers and us travelers? So let's just start tackling first what exactly happened with Jetstar, right? I mean, in a nutshell, was it struggling to make money, or is this a sign of things to come that, low-cost carriers could be flying out of Singapore, could be, a bellwether? You think that they could be affected?
Well, first of all, Jetstar has been in Singapore for the past 21 years. It's the only foreign carrier that's based in Singapore, apart from homegrown Singapore Airlines and Scoot. So it knows the country well. It knows Changi very well. It was here in an attempt to counter the likes of AirAsia, Cebu Pacific, on all the other LCCs in Indonesia and other parts of Southeast Asia. So 21 years ago, 2004, something like that, that's when we all first got to know the discount budget airlines. But over the years, it hasn't done very well. AirAsia was very much the top dog, if you like. They had the first mover advantage, and then Singapore came out with Value Air, with Tiger, and a few other subsequently. And over the years, it's Jetstar Asia has only managed to be solvent for 6 out of the 21 years that it was operating here. So the writing, as I said in my column recently, was on the wall because it was never really competitive, didn't have the competitive advantage. It had a big brand name behind it, which is Qantas. And then as Singapore also grew more expensive, and in tandem with SIA and Scoot, in fact, I would emphasize, has done incredibly well, especially post-COVID. And then that means Jetstar Asia didn't really have much role to play.
So, Nitin, perhaps you want to jump in here then. Do you think that it was just simply about one airline, just one low-cost airline trying to struggle just to stay profitable?
In this case, in this instance, it could be. But as Shukur said, it's a matter of having that leadership position. So AirAsia, it has the volumes, and probably because it has good routes. I think, I don't know whether Jetstar's routes were very well traveled or not. So that's very important. The competition takes place on a route by route basis, not on a company to company basis. So if you're stuck with less traffic routes, then your costs are going to kind of grow because you just have fixed cost and they don't get spread over.
I mean, Jetstar, they've basically highlighted is the high costs, right, of running its base out of Singapore. I believe Changi is aiming to expand its network to over 200 cities by the mid-2030s. We're talking about airlines will need to pay about 40% more to land and park their lanes at Changi. So if that is the case, then, I mean, is that, over time, that is to a certain extent going to affect Changi's competitiveness as an aviation hub, don't you think?
But then it's a question of who are they competing against, right? So they cannot compete on cost versus, say, Bangkok or KL, right? Probably they are targeting like the Dohas and the Dubais and so on, right? So basically their basis of comparison is that, right? So actually, I must say that when I arrived in Singapore, I'm not Singaporean, so I arrived in Singapore 30 years ago. I must say that, again, based on my impressions as a traveler, the Changi seemed a lot more functional than luxurious. So it was very good functioning. I love that, you know, which is...
How many years ago was that?
That was about 30 years ago.
Without the waterfalls.
Without the jewel. There was only Terminal 1 and 2. 2 was the new terminal and at that time. And then there came 3 and whatever, 4 and all that stuff. I think Changi has taken a little bit of shift towards luxury. And when you do that, your cost go up, and Singapore also has become more affluent. So everything is more expensive. Singapore is going to be a high cost place compared to, say, KL or Bangkok or some similar regional hub.
It's, I mean, worrisome for a large group of people, you know, who are used to these like $100 and under sort of flight tickets, right? Like traveling to Jetstar. I guess to a certain extent that is not practical, because then how does the Jetstar, for instance, make money, right? But then does that also mean that those days are over, that, you know, we shouldn't be expecting to pay such low prices?
They are over a long time ago. Post-COVID, I can confirm it's over. It's only low cost in name, but in reality, it's pretty much high fares. You have ancillary fees. You have a lot of other payments that you are going to be
so you're
making.
Saying it has narrowed the gap, what you're paying for
very
these
much.
So-called low-cost carriers versus the legacy airlines.
So what we're seeing now is that the legacy airlines, the flag carriers, are in fact becoming low-cost or budget airlines. If you look at what Malaysia Airlines or Thai Airways or Philippine
Economy
Airlines...
Economy class, are, right, that is.
yeah, a cattle class, really. Like. Yes, so those days when you can fly for, you know, a plate of chicken rice, for example, $10 sing. You know, at the hawker center, you can fly to Bangkok, you can fly to Jakarta. I've done that before in 20 years ago. One, because I'm a lot older. And I was at the forefront of when all these budget airlines were coming into the business. But now it's very different. And it's more competitive. Previously, AirAsia had the first mover advantage. They were the only one running around. And then subsequently, all the neighbors next to Singapore started getting very excited, and they came out with their own low-cost carriers. So Indonesians are very active now in the discount carrier segment. They have Lion, they have Spice, they have so many.
So at the end of the day, I mean, the traveler, they're just going to be looking at what is the final cost, right? I mean, for like budget traveler, do we just... What sort of minimum standards should we set? Because a lot of times, you know, when you sit for a budget plane, right, there's always a delay. Do we realistically expect it? Oh, you know, if you're going to take budget, it should be late up to 2 hours. You should take that, you know, as it is, because that's what you're paying for.
Both legacy airlines and budget carriers are guilty of being late and being, you know, having delays.
But I'm not legacy, though.
Well, let's put Singapore Airlines aside, because they are the exception more than the rule, because all these other secondary carriers, our neighbors in the region, they are guilty of being always, well, not always, but frequently late and delayed. And at the same time, there's always cancellations and all that. So not just the discount carriers are guilty of that, but the full service airlines are too, because sometimes, you know, there are technical issues. We're seeing a lot of issues coming out these days. It's a very complex industry. So I think people who want to fly cheaply expect it to be seamless and all that. So they enjoy doing that. But it's a lot of work goes into one flight. Extremely. It's a very, very complicated.
So I want to bring up the fact that I think one of Jetstar Asia's gripe was the fact that, you know, they had to move from T1 to T4 away from Qantas, and they said that disrupted its connectivity. Do you think that was a straw that broke the camel's back?
Probably, yeah, because I don't know what is the connecting traffic there, what percentage of traffic is connecting. So they are point-to-point flyers, and there are people who connect to that, and it would definitely affect the connecting people, the people who are making that transfer. So I don't know what the proportion of people. Many budget airlines are essentially point to point. You know, a large proportion of their customers are point to point, but some could be transfer, and those could be affected. I think one of the things that you know, we talked about before this started was that, you know, there is a perception that there's a lot more money to be made in full-service carriers. And maybe as Qantas probably decided that, look, my capital is better served. You know, as Shukor said, they have made money 6 out of 21 years, so which is roughly 1 in 3, every 3 years. So in that case, I better put my money where the prospects look rosy, at least to them, right? So it's them.
So in other words, you're saying Qantas is just sort of focusing Australia, New Zealand, maybe not in Asia so much now.
Or whatever, full service operations, you know, wherever they fly, yeah. But with the base being Australia, yeah.
So in a nutshell, would you say that, you know, for a lot of these carriers, you know, who are subjected to higher costs, operational fees and all that, they have no control over that, right? So it's just
not
a way
at
of
all.
Just
no.
being competitive.
No. No.
And
but coming back again to the concept and this idea of investing in an airline, it's never a good idea to invest in an airline. If you have followed what Warren Buffett has been saying all these years. I mean, he got bitten very badly before when he invested in American carriers before. And so his advice to many wannabe investors in airlines is don't do it. It's just very difficult and very time-consuming. And
so you are not optimistic that much either. Because, you know, like Singapore, we're expanding, right? We're building another terminal.
Yeah.
We're going up to Terminal 5. You know, we're expecting, you know, a lot more, you know, flights and connecting all the routes and all of that. So, in other words, how should I read into what you're saying?
Well, I'm also pessimistic about airlines. And actually, I have no idea where all this wonderful traffic, which is being lot of fares is coming from. I have two kids who are both like, one is very young, as in started a job about 2-3 years back, and another is slightly older. And they both like routinely worry about, you know, the layoffs, right? We hear all the time about the tech people getting laid off and so on. Today's younger generation has a lot more uncertainty about their job security. But I think what probably had changed is their behavior in terms of how much they spend. So they're willing to, for that today's gratification, they are willing to spend a lot more. Maybe that's what is keeping the airlines going in that sense. So, but will that continue? I don't know. I mean,
but on the plus side, you know, when they let go 500 people, well, the news has it like, you know, SIA or Scoop, they're going to scoop these guys up and, you know, give them a job. So in a sense, there is a runway of 6 to 7 weeks, right, before the operation totally ceases. I mean, was that a decent time frame for any airlines?
Well, from what I'm hearing, Jetstar Asia's flights are already since the last few days, since they announced, there were cancellations, I think, a lot of cancellations, a lot of retimed flights at Changi. So I don't think we need to wait until July 31st to see the total departure or exit of Jetstar Asia. They're already doing it. So I think they want to quicken the process so that the unfortunate staff will have more time to be absorbed, if they are, eventually into the SIA group, for example. But I also want to say that I don't think SIA is doing it purely for national service. It's a very commercial-focused airline.
They need the people.
They need the people. Yeah. They need the pilots, especially.
So, but and then that's a good sign,
it is for
right?
now,
for
but
aviation, yeah.
Lest we forget, you know, we are watching every day, as I'm sure you are, that what's happening in the Middle East, you know, that, and that's likely to deteriorate before it can get resolved. So that's going to hurt aviation. So again, like what Dr. Nitin said just now, I agree very much. So it's a very pessimistic outlook.
So even though, like, you know, the fact that for leisure travel, right, not a lot of people are actually heading that way, like whether it's Iran, Israel and those kinds of places, but it will affect in terms of the cost of petrol
rerouting,
and that oil. Yeah.
Yeah. So my daughter is a consultant and she is a banking consultant, and nowadays her clients say that, you know, don't travel because it costs us more money. And 2 years back, she used to like, every Monday she would fly to New York, stay there till Friday and fly back on Friday. And nowadays the banks are saying, clients are saying, stay put, you know, just stay there so that our costs are less. But the point is that the outlook, as we both agree, is not rosy. But clearly airline executives disagree with us, right? They're placing orders for a lot of planes.
Well, they are. As we speak in Paris, they're announcing various orders,
yeah.
hundreds of orders, in fact. I mean, IndiGo has also firmed up some orders. So, but That's a very good airline, I have to say, IndiGo in India. But air travel, budget air travel, is discretionary travel, meaning people only fly when they have some money left in the pockets, right? So the outlook, I'm a bit of a contrarian here. If you look at what's happening around the world, and things are very bad. And I think what the Singapore leadership, the government has been saying, has always been telling citizens here that, look, things are not going to get better, right? In fact, it's going to get worse. So that is why certain things are in place, there are preparations in place. So I think Singapore is one of the very, very few countries who understand geopolitics very, very well. But the airlines, and this is an issue because the airlines are not looking at what's happening in Ukraine, what's happening in Iran and Israel. A large swathe of that airspace is no go now. So when you fly to Europe from Southeast Asia, you're going to incur a lot of costs because you're rerouting, you're burning more fuel, basically.
So, I mean, at the rate that, you know, this conflict is happening, you foresee our flight charges or airfares to go up. You're in the near to medium term.
It depends very much on.
So give me an example, and by how many percent? What are we talking about?
Well, if you, Singapore Airlines, for example, is still flying an A380. Well, they have few A380 double decker. You're familiar with that. I think most people are. On an A380 flight from Singapore Changi to London Heathrow, for example, just take a guess how much jet fuel. You would need to fly from Singapore direct 14 hours to London Heathrow, for example. A lot of fuel, you would imagine, right? So it's a big plane, four engines. Mm-hmm. And at, what is it today? 70-something. Something dollars, you know. So jet fuel has a different price because it's refined fuel and all that. Mm. But it requires many, many tons. So at the back of the envelope calculation, you're looking at least 200 to 250,000 US dollars one way just to pay for the fuel. So this could very well have some variables to it, right, depending on the price of oil. But if you are flying from Singapore and you need to fill an aircraft with 450 passengers and try to make money, and there are four flights daily from Changi to London every day, so it's not easy. But the fact that SIA has been exceptionally profitable, so it says a lot,
I mean,
about
the bonuses
how
bonuses they've been giving out. Right?
Yeah, bonuses
quite generous.
Aside, yeah.
But then again, it's to make
really
up the COVID
fascinated
years.
By
yeah,
the
yeah. That's true. But SIA is unique in the industry. Yeah. So if it's you know, if everything else goes badly, I bet that SIA will still be a formidable carrier, but it will suffer in terms of revenue, in terms of profits, and it's not going to be making as much as it did the last 2 years.
But, you know, Sugar, going back to what you said earlier, right, Singapore government is very warning citizens that things will get worse and so. But that doesn't apply to the airport expansion, though, right?
Yeah.
There are big plans for
that's
expansion.
That's going to happen.
That's
maybe.
A very good point, because I don't know. Were you at T5 groundbreaking?
No, I
was. Yeah, so I was there, and it was really fancy. And this, again, is a sign of how the government do not see short-term. So it's what's going to happen in 2035 and beyond. And the anticipation that Changi, which is about 90 million in traffic today, will add another 50 million. Mm-hmm. So like you, I think we're thinking, you know, where is this coming from? But that's what we said 10, 15 years ago,
exactly.
when they built T3 and all that. So the industry is very resilient. The industry is very strong. But we are, I think, about to enter a phase where it's going to be very, very, very different from what we have.
But then wouldn't that mean then that sort of like then low-cost carriers, this is the time for them because, you know, where people might consider, okay, maybe I won't go to London because it's going to cost me so much, but maybe I'll go to Bali instead. I'll do a few more short trips around.
Yeah, you know, going back to one of the points Shukur mentioned earlier, which is that actually I just booked a flight within the US on Southwest today. Southwest is the quintessential budget cash. Well, it was not cheaper, you know. It was, so the only reason I chose Southwest was that the timing was better for me. It means it was a 1 p.m. flight instead of an 8 a.m. flight. 8 a.m. flight is painful, you know, you have to. So anyway, the point is that budget and you know, the full service are very, very similar. The second is that, you know, we talk about fares. The fares is a bit of an ambiguous concept in airlines because each seat is sold at a different price, could be sold at a different price. So even when the costs go up, some people will bear disproportionately that increase, whereas some others might still get a bargain. Okay, so those bargain people might still not be worse off if they can find, but maybe those bargains will be harder to find.
So I just want to go back to the traveler again and talking about the low-cost carriers, right? So we talked earlier about how sometimes there's overbookings, poor communication, you know, all of that when their flights are delayed. Is that something that, you know, this is what you paid for, this is what you're going to get? I mean, is that fair to the traveler?
Let me remind you, the most successful low-cost or airlines in the world, for that matter, is the one you've just... you're going to fly Southwest, and in Europe, it's Ryanair is the most profitable carrier in Europe. It's a low cost airline. I don't know if you try flying it before. Ryanair is excellent.
Because for the price is excellent, is it?
It's cheap. I think you know what my British friend says. He can fly from, let's say, from Luton in the UK to Mallorca or somewhere, you know, in Spain for the price of a pint of beer, he says,
wow.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, but that's still the case.
But you see, this is never going to come to Singapore in that sense.
It did. It was there before. I mean, AirAsia was there, like I said, you know.
You missed it.
20, you were too young then. 25 years ago, you can fly on AirAsia for like, you know, a plate of chicken rice.
Okay,
really.
Just moving forward.
Yes.
Moving forward.
But it's no longer the case today because things are very different. The price of money has gone up. The Sing dollar today is very different from 20, 25 years ago when the low-cost carrier emerged in this area.
So in a nutshell, right, if Singapore, I mean, they are going to be, you know, increasing the cost handling fees and all of that, right, do you think that they can remain competitive as an aviation hub, which is what the whole intention is?
I think, yes, because Singapore has proven to be very creative in many aspects. I mean, there have been many times when you thought, you know, COVID might destroy everything here because Singapore is very much dependent on aviation, you know, as a livelihood. Without aviation, everything's gone, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and we still have to maintain our best airport in the world.
Correct. Yeah,
well.
Yeah. So there's a price to pay for all that. And there's a price to pay to have good people running Changi Airport groups, running Singapore Airlines. And you need to always come up with new ideas on how to be two steps ahead of the competitors, especially in the Gulf, where they have very, very deep pockets.
The missing piece in your analysis is that our conception of what is cheap or what is inexpensive keeps changing over time, you know. So I remember when I used to buy cars at a depreciation of $6,000 a year was the kind of the going rate, you know. And today that is what, 14,000, 13,000, 14,000. So I think even you are, I'm
so
not
it's
a
relative
big,
to what you earn, what your bonuses
exactly,
are, and then
yeah.
you can determine what cheap is.
She keeps coming back to bonuses.
I know.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
No.
My suggestion is don't drive and save your money and fly because it's the safest mode of transportation.
Yeah.
You're more likely to get into an accident.
I'm too old.
But then we are getting autonomous vehicles. So.
We are. That's good. I welcome that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm too old to walk in this hot weather and get sweaty.
You know, you've both raised a really good point to say, you know, the aviation industry. I mean, what you can afford, what cheap is. You've really made us sort of, you know, analyze and rethink those concepts. So thank you very much for your time and thoughts, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Well, on that note, let's hope the fall, you know, we might get a new aircraft carrier coming in. We don't know. We still wait and watch this space. Thank you so much for watching Deep Dive. I also want to say a big thank you to the team. Tiffany Ang, Junaini Johari, Joanne Chan, Saye Win, Ho Pei Ning, Shaza Dalila, Allison Jenner, as well as Ili Mansour. Thank you so very much. All right. See you next week.